breakthroughs in medical technology have extended life and improved life quality profoundly in recent decades. Most noteworthy in the field of surgery, minimally invasive procedures, guided by tiny scopes or with the assistance of robots, have transformed many open surgical procedures, resulting in smaller scars, less blood loss, and postoperative pain, as well as faster recovery and shortened hospital stays. But the question remains, how do all these breakthroughs affect outcomes? And what does it mean for the future? Well, to answer these questions, we are most fortunate to have with us this morning Dr. Randolph Chitwood, an esteemed expert in minimally invasive surgery. With a distinguished career in the field of cardiothoracic surgery, he has special expertise in complex valvular surgery, including mitral repair, as well as aortic valve and cardiac rhythm surgery, and is now Senior Associate Vice Chancellor for Health Affairs and the Director of the East Carolina Heart Institute, as well as the Chief of the Division of Cardiothoracic and Vascular Surgery. He is here in Syracuse to share some of his expertise with the upstate medical community and has been gracious enough to join us on air this morning. Welcome, Dr. Chitwood.
It's great to be in Syracuse.
Yeah, we're so happy to have you. So for the benefit of our listeners, can you briefly explain how the term minimally invasive applies to what you do?
Minimally invasive has really two connotations. One is, some people would say, is not using the heart-lung machine. But the way I generally think of minimally invasive is tiny incisions, working through small ports to do the standard operations that we do in the past through a breastbone incision. It's better for the patient. And heretofore, it was tougher for the surgeon. But today, with some of the new technology, it's much better than it was in the past, even through a full sternotomy incision.
It seems amazing to me, actually, that you can actually perform these kinds of complex surgical procedures with a tiny keyhole incision. Is this something you could have dreamt of, let's say, 20 years ago?
Well, in North Carolina, I can see people on television in New York City.
Yes, true.
Okay. Therefore, if you can go through a chest wall with a small incision and see just as well on the other side as you do through a big incision, you can do the operation just as well.
That's a great point.
So the new technology has been developed to allow access. There's nothing robotic about this. It's not R2-D2 or C-3PO or Will Robinson. It is a device that allows access. It allows you to have excellent vision and excellent ergonomic access to all parts of the heart.
For the benefit of our listeners, and actually for my benefit as well, can you help clarify some terminology? I hear bandied about all the time the term with regard to minimally invasive, laparoscopic, and then I hear endoscopic. Can you clarify what those mean and how they're different?
Well, really, the root name is endoscopic. It means a scope, a vision inside, whereas laparoscopic relates to the abdomen. Lapar in Latin means abdomen.
I see.
Or arthroscopic, which is related to the joints.
I see. So it has to do with what part of the body the scope is addressing, so to speak.
Yes, that's right. Or thoracoscopic.
A thoracoscopic is what you do, basically, the thorax and the cardiac area. But all of those are all considered minimally invasive, is that correct?
They're all minimally invasive.
Right. Right. So where does the robot fit into all of this?
Well, the robot is basically a device that allows you to telemanipulate from a station, in other words, the surgeon's motions, the exact motions they make with the instruments, and to emulate this inside the chest, inside the heart. So when I take a stitch in this fashion, it's replicated completely inside the heart, except there's no tremor. And your visualization is better because it's 10x magnification.
So it's expanding the capabilities that
it's
you would...
It's expanding the capabilities, and you have three-dimensional vision.
Now, one thing I guess I'm a little unclear about is if you were... Is it a little bit like, just for, again, for the benefit of our listeners, is it a little bit like using like a Wii, you know, this toy that they use when they pretend they're playing tennis on a screen and they move their arms and you see it on the screen?
Well, no, not really, because you're actually seeing direct vision, just as if you're looking through binoculars.
and your movements at this station
are emulated completely.
Like a joystick, almost.
Well, kind of like a joystick, but much more accurate.
Right. So what do you consider the benefits from all of your experience with that, if you were to just generalize to say what the benefits are?
I think the benefits are clearly cosmesis. Small incision is not as ugly. Much faster recovery.
You can less get back, blood loss, perhaps?
Less blood loss. You can get back to work within a couple of weeks. Less blood loss, less time on the ventilator. And so 10 years from now, there's no difference whether you had minimally invasive or a full sternotomy. But in the immediate recovery period, there is a difference.
And basically faster recovery, as you said. Are there complications less or more from doing an open procedure versus this, or is there no difference?
Well, bleeding is certainly less. The complications are dependent today mostly on the patient's comorbidities.
Meaning what pre-existing conditions they may have had?
If they've had strokes before, whatever. And some of those patients will not qualify for a minimally invasive operation. Because in those patients, it's safer to do it through a traditional procedure. So in the cohort of patients, the individuals that undergo the robotic surgery, they're pretty straightforward patients. They just have one problem, a leaky mitral valve. Generally, they're younger patients, 55 to 60, and don't have a lot of other medical problems.
And they lend themselves, therefore, to this kind of approach. Well, I want you to hold that thought. We're going to come back and talk a lot more about it. We have to take a short break. We'll be right back with more from Dr. Chitwood. So please stay right there. I'm Linda Cohen. This is HealthLink on Air, FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSYR. Welcome back to HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen along with my guest, Dr. Randolph Chitwood, internationally acclaimed cardiac surgeon, and we're talking about minimally invasive cardiothoracic surgery. So before the break, you were telling us that overall, minimally invasive surgery, especially heart surgery, it really helps with the immediate effects. But in terms of the long-term outcomes, basically, they're the same as to whether you do an open procedure or a minimally invasive procedure. Is that correct?
Yeah, the results for mitral valve repair are the same. In other words, we tried to get, first you have to get as good results or better results than with a standard technique. So we're out far enough now to know that our quality of operations are parallel to those of a full sternotomy through the breastbone and traditional surgery.
Okay, well, I understand that you've done some very, very extraordinary pioneering work, that you were the first, the person to perform the first robotic heart operation in 10 different countries. Can you tell us about that?
Well, it's a very interesting thing. We first did things in the United States and through FDA protocols to get the device approved. Then in Thailand, England, a whole bunch of different countries, Italy, we mentored people and taught them how to do these operations. And basically, we did the first one in India, Thailand. It's fascinating because you'd say, well, gosh, you're going to go to India. Well, I went in the Escorts Heart Institute, and it had nicer equipment than we had at home.
Oh, my goodness, really?
So, you
That's
know,
a shocker.
Well, in Thailand, it was basically a German operating room.
Oh.
And so, you know, I was operating just recently in Paraguay. And the hospital was old and looked like a really, you know, not well-kept place. But the operating room was totally modern with the same echo stuff that we have here. And so you see in a lot of these places, they do have maybe not as many great places, but they have some good places that the technology is being used.
It's interesting because we do get parochial in this country where we think we're the only ones who have everything.
Right.
But clearly it's not the case. So that you actually were the principal investigator, you just alluded to that, for the robotic mitral valve trials for the FDA?
Correct.
So that you were engaged in figuring out whether, in fact, this was going to be an effective procedure.
The first studies are done as a safety and efficacy. In other words, is it as safe, is it as good as a standard technique? We operated on 20 patients, presented that to the FDA, and of course we informed the patients completely that if we had trouble with the robot, that we would do it either via traditional method.
So you always had that as a fallback.
Yeah, and they always, and I must say, they were pioneers because basically they wanted a small incision if we could do it, but were willing to accept traditional surgery if we couldn't do it. And none of those patients did we have to convert to a traditional operation, and no mortalities and no major complications.
It's wonderful.
So then you go back and say, can this be done just not at your place, but at different places? So we selected 10 centers from across the country, and we did a multi-center study. Then we collected that data, and we were able to replicate this at other institutions. Based on that, it was approved for general use in thoracic surgery.
So basically, that's become state-of-the-art, it
yes.
sounds like. Are there any disadvantages?
Well, some will say cost is a disadvantage. These devices now are upwards of $1.5 million to $2 million. But I tell folks, okay, CT scanner is expensive, but it's the standard of care to use these devices. So what you have to do, if you're just doing cardiac surgery, you won't use it enough. So you have to have a robotic users group. For example, in urology, over 65% of the prostatectomies are now done using robotics. And in GYN surgery, over 50% of the endoscopic stuff is being done using robotics. ENT surgery. So you develop a robotics user group so that this is a shared resource for the institution. And that's the way you take care of the cost issue.
Are there, go ahead.
Also team training. It's a team sport. You really have to have a team. And basically, they have to be well trained. They think the robot's going to make them a better surgeon. It won't make you a better surgeon. It'll make you the same surgeon, but allow you access in small places. So you really have to understand that concept. This is not going to take a mediocre doctor and make them fantastic. But it will take a talented surgeon to that next level of being able to access through small incisions.
Are there any downsides to the use of the robot? I mean, you've done it both ways, obviously. You were trained initially without the robot. How about like hand-eye coordination, the issue of kinesthetic feedback, the touch, all those things? I mean, because it seems like it must be a major adjustment to go from your hands in the body to being at a little console making those things happen.
Well, when people enter this area now, they're working with a third-generation device. So let's roll the clock back to 2000, the year 2000, when we had a first-generation device. The vision wasn't as good. The ergonomics, what I mean by that, the hand-eye motion wasn't as good. And there was a learning curve. There's no question about it. So we practiced and practiced and practiced. It's like, you know, the 10,000-hour theory. If you practice for 10,000 hours, you're going to be pretty good. So we were able to, the instrument exchanges were difficult. It was more difficult. But as we evolved, the devices we have now, you don't need tactile feedback. You have ocular feedback from your eyes, which is 80% of your sensory input. You have excellent ergonomics. The assistants can exchange the instruments very rapidly. And so it's decreased the operative time. And the visualization is fantastic. It's three-dimensional, high definition, magnified with good color rendition. And so basically, you know, it's a different ball game today. So now as we roll it out in these different areas, the individuals now that are using these newer devices don't have to experience the early years.
Is the training as long?
No, the training's shorter. I mean, basically, I insist on having an experienced surgical group to train, not novices or residents. And so they come with the attitude of, we have a nurse, a first assistant, an anesthesiologist, a heart-lung machine person, and a surgeon. And they train on the system first, just to learn how to work the system and to troubleshoot and handle all those things. Then they learn at a different setting on specific operations, one at a time, whether it's valves, coronaries. We also train in urology. We train all the way across. Even though I'm a cardiac surgeon, our laboratory is set up to train cross-specialty. And so generally a well-organized team, when they come for the first week and have system training and then come at a later time for mitral training, they can usually go back and perform that operation almost as well as we can. We always send a mentor, a surgeon mentor, out either to Japan or whatever to for their first cases.
Amazing. Do you think that do you expect that all heart surgeries will eventually become minimally invasive, or are there some patients, like you alluded to earlier, that are not good candidates?
Well, we know that patients with severe pulmonary disease, lung disease, don't do well if you go through the chest and maybe because of potential injury, the phrenic nerve, which is the motor nerve for the diaphragm, and they probably do better through a sternotomy.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we've even modified our sternotomy. We may make the same size incision in the bone, but we don't spread the ribs as much. Also, there are certain operations that are just not amenable to robotics because they're problems on different parts of the heart, and so you have a geographic location problem. You've got two coronaries over here, and you've got a valve over here. Also, a lot of, you know, like aortic arch stuff, where they're basically have to replace the ascending aorta from an aneurysm, that won't be amenable to this.
So what do you see as in new advances in the robot coming down the pike? What kinds of changes? You said there's been so much transformation since 2000. What new things are coming down the pike?
Well, one thing we have is the new things are trainers, which are basically electronic modules, very much like the kids play with games, that have a certain set of tasks. And there are metrics that actually measure how well you do those tasks. And it's kind of daunting when an experienced person like me sits down in one of these, you know, relatively, quote, simple things, and your score is not as high as you would think.
Okay? Yes,
and
I can
so
relate.
You work with this a little bit, and your scores are better. And so that kind of simulation training is where we're going. The other thing is image-guided surgery. In other words, by using echocardiography to plan operations, because we're operating on the heart when it's stopped. So to plan the operation is based on the pathology of a heart that's beating. And we measure everything, and now we know like a pattern, like mother used to make dresses. Not many mothers do anymore. But you put a pattern over the valve, and it's sort of like cut here, stitch here. And the other thing that will come is I think in time you'll have CT scanning that will be integrated with these devices to say essentially drill here. In other words, rather than making an incision and taking a peek in and directing it with vision where you put these arms, it'll say with laser guided accuracy, you'll come right at the mitral valve if you go in this spot and this spot.
Amazing. Well, the technology clearly is making the difference, but it's got to be in hands like yours, experienced, well-trained, and as you said, it's not going to make a phenomenal surgeon out of a mediocre one. Well, Dr. Randolph Chitwood, esteemed cardiothoracic surgeon and pioneer in the field of robotic minimally invasive surgery and director of the East Carolina Heart Institute, thanks so much for sharing some time with us today. I know you have a very busy schedule, but we really appreciate your coming in. We have to take another short break. We'll be right back, so please stay right there. I'm Linda Cohen. This is HealthLink on Air, FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSYR.